Welcome back to the program. A bit of a delayed start to the cricket last night, Wiz, so I didn't get to see a ball bowl, but I've woken up this morning and got the old scorecard in front of me. And I tell you what, Jofra Archer may just be the single reason that England can win back the Ashes. Our man on the spot is Pete Lawler, chief cricket writer at the Australian and part of the SEN cricket commentary team. Pete, welcome to you. It's looking all right when we were three down for 130-odd.
Two down for 136 at one stage. Yeah, it was looking very good then, but... Yeah, difficult, very, very difficult morning, difficult afternoon. Want to be glass half full type of guy, have a look at Warner's innings and have a look at Labuschagne's contributions because they were outstanding, two half centuries, but two halves don't make a hole in this situation. I think the other nine batsmen have contributed about 31 runs to the score. So I don't know if I want to celebrate their contributions or have a go at the others. But you're right, Archer bowled really well. It wasn't the Archer we saw at Lord's. He wasn't bruising bodies so much as he was bruising egos. It was those conditions where you had to pitch the ball up. If you didn't see the start of play, I'd advise you to go back and have a look because you will rarely see conditions more difficult. You'll rarely see the ball swing more than it was out of Stuart Broad's hand or seam off the pitch. It was horrendously difficult. Warner played and missed at more deliveries than he's faced in the entire series. At one point, I think the stats had him playing and missing to 51% of the deliveries he faced. They weren't bad shots. He was holding his line. Only once, I reckon, did he get a little bit wobbly, but he just stuck to his task. They were on, they were off, they were on, they were off. And luck went his way this innings to a degree. He rode his luck. And I reckon that he'll rate that. It's one of the best half centuries he's ever scored.
Okay, so from that point of view, the 179 may not look as bad as it does on paper. Now, we will have the new ball in our hand for the first ball tonight. Will we expect the same sort of conditions?
Well, I'll go back and I'll say that 179 isn't that bad because I've seen Australian teams get out by a hell of a lot less in conditions possibly weren't as bad. And we only have to go back to Trent Bridge in 2015 where they were bowled out for 60. It was one of those days where you could be bowled out for 60 or less, to be honest. The bad news is the sun's out tomorrow. The pitch won't do as much. The ball won't do as much in the air. It won't do as much off the pitch. So Australian bowlers are going to have to work really hard. Scoring's quite easy on this ground. I know it doesn't look like that when you look at the scorecard, but it's a fast ground and the ball, and you can accumulate runs quickly. And at one point there, I think Labuschagne and Warner made about 70 runs from 11 overs. They really cashed in and played very positively. I want to say one thing about Labuschagne. Have to find a way to keep that kid in the cricket team. He's gold. He's a much better cricketer than the one who came into the Australian side late last year. He's better than the one we saw at times during the summer. He's improved at least 20% from his exposure to conditions in England. He's got great spirit. We saw that in the way that he batted at Lord's. But he's also a reasonably skillful player. I like everything I see about him, and Justin Lang has been right from him from the start.
Who was the most disappointing then of our batsmen overnight?
Oh, where do you want to start? I mean, look, they got a lot of good balls. Khawaja got strangled down the leg side. Wade had one that bounced off his elbow and onto his stumps. Someone else got strangled down the leg side. And look, the bowling was really hard to start against. I can't emphasise about how difficult it was. You kind of give them a pass mark on a day like that. Sometimes you're going to get deliveries that get you out. And when you get strangled down the leg side, you know you're having a really, you know, that luck's against you, as happened with Khawaja. But, I suppose you could mark them all hard for not... Look, none of them got into double figures.
No.
Payne got
Payne
11,
did, yeah.
Didn't he? Yeah, that's right.
And just watching Matthew Wade goes out, yeah. He was a little unlucky. Now, as we let you go, Pete, we have the bowling attack, though, to take advantage. If ever we're going to Pattinson into the side with Hazelwood as well, and also, of course, Cummins. So there's an opportunity to make some inroads early.
Yeah, they'll have to make heroes of themselves today, or in the same way that Warner and Labuschagne did with the bat. They're really going to have to step up to to limit England's scoring, I think, because there's runs out there tomorrow. Well, that's my feeling. It's a dry wicket and the sun will be out and it's going to be hot. But if Australia can limit what England score in this innings, they will back them. Well, they'll back Nathan Lyon to do some damage on the bowling last year.
All right, it's going to be very, very interesting. Great to talk to you. Enjoy the second day's play.
Thanks, fellas. See ya.
Welcome back to the program, The Good Oil for Penrite today. Penrite Oil is Australian owned and trusted for more than 90 years. You can visit penriteoil.com. Brian Windhorst very shortly. Mike Sheehan out of 8 o'clock. It's been a very big night, overnight sport here. We had the Australians taking on the USA team. That's what we're going to talk to Brian about. And we had Test cricket being played over in England.
That's right. And we woke up this morning and it was all negative about the basketball last night and how outraged fans were, in particular Russell Crowe. And we've already played a little bit of him. He stood up at the basketball last night, what he had to say. Apparently he's going back again on Saturday.
Is he?
Yes.
Not happy.
I think he's going to unleash hell. Have a listen to this.
Father to a murdered son. Husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
He's not finished yet, Gary. He wasn't happy with those plastic seats last night.
He must have had bad seats.
That was shocking, plastic seats.
Well, Brian wasn't there last night, but I know that he watched it. He's a two-time New York Times best-selling author. People would know him here in Australia. Well-known NBA reporter for ESPN. He's a former Cleveland Cavs beat writer. You can hear him on The Ringer as well. Great pleasure to talk to Brian. Good morning and welcome to Australia, Brian.
Good morning. The thing about it is when you play basketball in football stadiums, you tend to run into problems. And I see that the first time around doing that, everybody sees why it's such a bad idea.
Oh, there was a big, big crowd there last night, though, Brian. I think they loved it. I mean, the feedback we got this morning is they loved it. What did you think about the game itself?
Yeah, we're never going to get a good game playing on a court like that. That's a raised court with a crazy background. You know, we do it for our college basketball national championship, and you always see bad basketball. So the scoring is always down in environments like that. But, yes, you're able to get 50,000 people into the building, so that's a positive. But the environment's not great for basketball. The game very much went the way many games for the U.S. will go, and that is if the U.S. team makes their outside shot, they will be the best team in the world. In the first half, they didn't make that many. In the second half, they made a bunch, and they won. And when they play again tomorrow, it's very possible the U.S. will have a bad shooting game, and the Aussies could easily beat them. This is not an unbeatable team. They are very much reliant on that guard play and that outside shot. But if they make them, they're pretty good. You saw that in that second half especially.
Brian, were we terribly naive when this match was first promoted? The suggestion was come and watch the US team and see Harden and Curry and Westbrook and all these sorts of players. So all of us starved Aussies went and rushed and bought tickets and thought how good it's going to be. The reality is that this is far from the best team the US could put out on the court. Were we a bit naive, suggesting we might have seen those players?
Yeah, it's been disappointing for us too. This is by far the most top players who've pulled out in the era where the NBA players can go. There's only two All-Stars on this roster. Very unusual. It's not unusual for it to be more younger. You don't always see the older stars play on the World Cup teams. But the overall star power is way down. There's been a lot of debate here in the U.S. as to why that is. Some of it is now that the World Cup is now 1 year removed from the Olympics, and the top players don't want to give up back-to-back summers. That's reasonable. The other thing is the NBA schedule is it now starts in September. The training camp is in September. It used to be in October. So if you commit to doing this, you go all the way up almost to the start of training camp. And then the third thing is players just are worried about injury. So this is concerning, especially because, you know, there is a lot of pride there has been for Team USA. Last summer, they got together for a training camp just to sort of get to know each other a little bit. And Kevin Durant was at that camp. Obviously, he's hurt, but Durant was there. Paul George was there. James Harden was there. This is a disappointing turnout. I agree. But it also gives the other countries an opportunity. This is a weaker U.S. team. If you're going to beat them, this is the time to do it. And if you beat them, it's not like anybody's going to take it away from you. You get the medal, you get the medal.
Hey, Brian, you mentioned Kevin Durant there, and I heard you talking on a podcast the other day on The Ringer about this, the fact that Kevin Durant probably exploded on the NBA scene after having played for America at a World Cup. And do you see a player in the American team right now capable of doing that?
Well, I think Donovan Mitchell is the guy that we're all watching. You know, this is a guy who is not yet regarded as one of the top players in the league, but his everything that he does in his game leads me to believe he's going to be a great player. Last summer, he was injured, and he wasn't able to participate in much. And he got off to a slow start in the NBA season last year because of it. I'm sure the Aussie fans follow him because he plays on Joe Ingles' team, but he had a better back half of the season. He is the type of guy who could have an explosive tournament and be a guy who in 3 or 4 years you say, oh, you said there was no superstars on that U.S. team, but what about Donovan Mitchell? He could turn in that kind of player.
Brian, speaking of Brian Windhorst, who's well-known to all sports lovers here in Australia, you've also got an unbelievable affinity with LeBron James. You've written books about him. Your latest one, LeBron Inc., The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete. What's his attitude towards playing for the U.S. team?
I think he's done. You know, he played a number of years in early. He played the 2004 Olympics in Greece, where the U.S. team had the disappointing bronze. He played the 2006 World Cup in Japan, which is also a bronze. He played 2008 in Beijing, which they won, which is known here in the U.S. as the Redeem Team, where they came off the two bronzes to get a gold. He played in 2012 in London. So he played 4 different times for the U.S. team at 3 different Olympics. He didn't play at Rio in 2016. His summers are very full. In fact, right now he's filming a movie, Space Jam 2. And his team, the Lakers, is so big internationally, he doesn't have to seek that extra attention. So, for example, you know, going to China is a huge deal for these players who have shoe contracts that want to get the Chinese fans. Mm. Well, LeBron and the Lakers are coming to China to play exhibition games in October. So I just don't know if LeBron feels the need to do it anymore. So I think you've probably seen him play his last international basketball.
Hey, Brian, you know him well. You know his manager, Rich Paul, really well. That whole Clutch Sports, it appears that it's almost got a stranglehold on the NBA now. What's the end play for somebody like LeBron James? What do you see him doing, or where do you see him in, say, 20 years' time?
Well, I think he wants to be relevant after his basketball career ends. That's the challenge for a great athlete. Some people have been able to do that. You know, Michael Jordan has gone on to become a billionaire and an owner of an NBA team. Shaquille O'Neal is very much on American television, involved in many business enterprises. He wants to extend his window of having influence, power, and earning money. And so one of the reasons I think he went to the Los Angeles Lakers, he's got 3 championships, and that doesn't compared to Michael Jordan's 6, but he feels like his career has been, his expectations have been met. He certainly continues to want to win, but he is thinking about the long term. He wants to make movies. He wants to produce television shows. He wants to own media companies. He eventually wants to be a sports team owner. That may be the NBA. That may be an English football team or some sort of European football team. It may be something else, but he wants to extend his influence. And, you know, there have been guys like Kobe Bryant who's trying to do that a little bit now. He won an Oscar for making a documentary within a couple of years of himself retiring. So that's a big challenge if you're a franchise-type player in the U.S. is to extend that window beyond your playing day.
I mean, the NBA right now is probably as popular as it's ever been, if not more popular than it's ever been. Has there been a slight power shift here in the game with the players taking a lot more control? And is that how you're reading it? Is that a concern, do you think, for the NBA, or do you think they're playing along with this?
Well, no, I definitely think it's a basic thing of the game. In a 5-player game where there's 10 players on the court and 5 players on one team, a great player will have more power than in other sports, more power than you'd have on a soccer team, more power than you'd have on an American football team, more power than you have on a baseball team. So that in some ways it's a miracle it's taken this long for the great players in basketball to realize that. So I think that's a natural evolution. But it's a star system. If you're a great player, you're going to be able to have great opportunities. You're going to have great power. where I think the NBA is in a challenge, and I do think this will spill over to other leagues, is there is so much interest right now in the palace intrigue, the who wants to demand a trade, who's going to go somewhere in free agency, and then so much is focused on the playoffs that the average regular season game, January evening when the Hawks play the Pacers, that's the game that is suffering. The regular season television ratings are going down. Interest in the mundane games themselves are going down. And that's the bedrock of where the league is successful. There's 30 cities. You have to have 30 teams. It only works if you could make that work. And that's a concern for the league right now. And one of the other things that's happening is the players are taking more rest. They're taking games off. And, you talked about last night some of the fans being disappointed that they bought a ticket and were not able to see the best players. Well, the same thing happens. You buy a ticket. LeBron comes to town in some of the U.S. cities once a year. Mm. The Warriors, Steph Curry, comes to once a year. And if that happens to be a night that they choose to take off, what do you say to the fan when the player isn't injured and he just is taking a rest? So there's a big push in the NBA right now about maybe reducing the amount of games. There's an idea of moving to more of the soccer model, which is that you don't just play for the NBA championship, that you may have other trophies that you would play for during the year to spice up the rest of the schedule. It's something that the league is struggling with as it grows in popularity around the globe.
Yeah, that is fascinating stuff. It is the same thing that we wrestle with here with our Australian rules football competition as well, Brian. Quickly, LeBron James was he
34?
He has a son who we're told is showing enormous promise. Is there some suggestion that he's trying to hang on and potentially play with his son in the NBA?
He would love to do that. He's thought about that for the last few years. But I have to tell you, having covered the NBA for almost 20 years now, it's very hard to look at a 14-year-old, which is how old his son now is, and say, that's going to be an NBA player. Mm. His father, LeBron, he was going to be an NBA player by 16. But he was the greatest high school player most people have ever seen. We're talking about a one in a billion type of athlete. I don't know if his son is going to be good enough to make the NBA. Maybe if we come back and talk in 2 years, we'll say absolutely. In two more years from now, they'll be playing together. But LeBron's hoping for it, but it's just too young. It's too early to know. He's a beautifully talented young player, Bronny. He doesn't go by LeBron. He goes by Bronny. He's fun to watch. I hope he does well, but I hope that the decisions are made for the best of him and not to force him into expectation.
Hey, Brian, it's been great talking to you this morning. Before we let you go, there was a tweet out yesterday, a report out somewhere yesterday, that Ben Simmons has been working on his step-back three-pointer in pickup games. How interested should we be in the fact that he's been able to hit a three-pointer in a pickup game?
Well, he doesn't even take three-pointers. I'd be just impressed with him to start actually to shoot them, because at least if he shoots them every now and then, you have to guard him out there. He's a fabulous player. He's going to have a great NBA career. That's why the 76ers gave him that enormous contract. But he has got to develop. He cannot be a finished product. He knows that. I don't care if he steps back. I don't care if he shoots it underhanded. He just needs to make one or two of those a game, and he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, Brian, it's a great pleasure to have spoken to you this morning. We get real-time feedback as we're going, and there's so many people that enjoy hearing your voice on our radio station. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and it was very impressive to see all those fans at the game, and they're all going to come again tomorrow. And I have great belief in the spirit of the Boomers and their chances at a medal both this summer and next summer.
That means a lot. Thanks a lot, Brian. Brian Windhorst joining us there. And what a fantastic chat that was with the man. You're bringing some very good guests to the table, Whispers. I'm enjoying what you're doing here. And as one of our text messages says, actually on Twitter, well done. Don't mess around with people and guests that have some idea. Get the people that are immersed in it. Great get.
One of the very best basketball voices out there in the world, Brian Windhorst, this morning. And also still getting a lot of great feedback about your performance on the front bar last night. Best show of the year. This is from Keith out there, and that's saying something. So you've impressed a lot of people last night, Gary. Well done to you.
Getting on you, Timmy. SEN Breakfast.
Big pat on the back to you.
Righto. There's a smacking coming somewhere. The greatest luxury adventures on earth, Abercrombie and Kent. We've done a lot of basketball. We've got some footy. We've got the last round of the AFL season is upon us. It starts tonight at the MCG between the Magpies, who are just starting to get things right, and an Essendon side who will play finals footy. But gee whiz, have they taken a hit? We'll talk about that and more after the break. The greatest luxury adventures on earth are from Abercrombie and Kent. Welcome back to Fun Friday. It is the hour of the week where we don't really know what's going to happen, and we quite enjoy that because Mike Sheehan's wandered in the good oil for Penrite today. Penrite Oil is Australian owned and trusted for more than 90 years. You can visit penriteoil.com. Before we welcome Mike, lads, can we please get a shout out for the Wallen Club 18 footy side playing in their first ever grand final tonight? Hope the skippers KB and Kerm can lead us to victory. Good on you, boys. Well done. Playing a night game tonight. Be a bit chilly.
No, they've got very good lights out that one.
Right, they. Michael Sheehan's here.
Morning, guys.
Welcome.
Hello, Tim.
Mike, you brought your banana in this morning.
I did. Fun Friday started 12 hours early. I was there sitting at home last night.
Oh, I thought you were saying you were there in the audience.
No. But I was very keen to watch you on the front bar.
Yes.
It's amazing. It was very good for Gary, Tim. Just pretend you're not here, Gary.
Let's talk about Gary for a minute.
I mean, he was funny. He interacted with people. He cracked cop gags about himself. It was a Gary that I hadn't seen.
Well, you and I both know him to be that person.
Only in the ad breaks.
No, I work with him 5 mornings a week. I know how funny.
And you did remind me, Gary, of how talented you were. Remember, you've said that you weren't great over your head. You took some good grabs, sir, in PAX.
Not many at all, to be honest.
Well, they found them all last night.
Yeah, they must have worked very hard to find them.
And those torps, mate, love the torps.
How good was it to see those torps, though? Like, those things we see so rarely in AFL football now. You know, the last time, the EJ Witten game last year, and it's the thing that I recall about the game over in Adelaide. Anytime one of the olden day players launched into a torp, you could hear the crowd. Just,
yes.
They'd rise.
Yeah. The torp would give you, I reckon, 15 metres more than your best drop punt.
When you really got one properly, further, I reckon.
Yeah.
Further. Oh, no, I'm serious on that. If you actually flushed one properly, I mean, if you could kick a drop punt 45 to 50, you could get a 75-metre torp. I think it's a weapon to use because my big thought on footy these days is going inside 50, which I'm a bit obsessed with, I know. But if you go for a torp, it's going to land somewhere unpredictable, right?
Yes.
Either you hit it properly and it's going to go over the pack, which where you're outnumbered generally. The forwards are always outnumbered as a rule. So you clear that, or if you hit it horribly,
it goes to
a space that you should be, you know, happy one-on-one.
It's so predictable, isn't it, these days? Blokes kicking, say, from 60 and putting it into that spot 15 metres in front of goal where there are about 25 blokes.
Best torp kicker of all time. I'm going to put Bernie Quinlan out there as the best torpedo kicker that I can recall ever in the history of the game. Outside Gary, present company excluded.
Who's got his arms up?
Who's got his hands up?
You have so.
Oh, turn it up,
you two. Bernie Quinlan?
Yeah, Bernie could kick a drop punt, 60.
No, but his torps were amazing.
Yeah.
Dustin Fletcher?
Yes, right up there.
When he could get onto one.
Darren, you know, the first time I saw Darren Bennett played for the West Coast, the first game I ever saw him play, he came to Windy Hill and he took a mark, and I reckon he was sort of, you know, close to the central circle of the ground, and he started to line up for goal. And I was going, what are you doing? Yeah, you're overrating yourself a little bit. Wow. He launched into a torp, and it ended up in Mrs. Clancy's milk bar outside the ground.
I've never seen a bloke kick a ball with more power than Darren Bennett, off the boot.
Did he go to America because he was such a good kick?
Yeah. He was the trailblazer.
Yeah.
Like, he went and played for 10 years. I think he's a Hall of Famer or something on that.
Really? Doug Wade was a big torp.
Well, that's going back. And when you watch old footy, I mean, Twiggy Dunn kicked the torp to siren to draw the grand final.
Imagine if he'd miscued that.
And flushed it.
He
kept going up the stand.
But they were used to it. They practiced and it was a natural kick then. These days, your point last night, you could try it and the rewards are rich, but you wouldn't want to mess it up, would you?
No.
It had nothing to do with how big your legs might have been or how much power you put into the kick. It was always about timing. I mean, how skinny was Gary when he started out in AFL football?
Did you watch him last night?
Yeah, I did. How skinny was he when
he
started?
He was skinny, yeah.
Is that stunned you, that statement?
Well, no. Well, I remember him being skinny. You were playing at 18, weren't you?
Yep. Yep. That would have been, I think, about 84 kicks.
Gee, there's some interesting faces on that group that went to Ireland.
Yeah, what is about that? I would love to revisit that. So this side, so it was John Blakey's.
Yeah.
Ross Lyon was our, we didn't have a captain, but he was the sort of spiritual leader. There's a guy I lived with, Peter McCarty, who I've spoken about here before, who never went on, but at that stage was...
Recognised him last
The equal of all those players.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Silvani.
Yep.
Of course.
Don Scott.
Scotty.
you had 5 weeks in Ireland.
5 weeks, wow. In the middle of the year. Yeah.
So, John Duckworth, getting some nominations coming through. Blighty could kick.
Yes,
a great torp.
Yep.
John Duckworth, remember, he's tall. He used to kick the torp out
the
from full back.
Fitzroy boy. Yeah.
What about Blighty?
Blighty too, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, you
said
Blighty. Yeah, Dacos. Pete, Dakes could get onto a torp. Benny Graham. I can't remember him. Did he kick big torps or big drop punts?
Big everything.
He was a big kick.
Yeah.
Darren Bennett. He was very similar to Darren Bennett in terms of the power that he kicked the footy with.
Remember Gary Malarkey kicking out from fullback for Geelong?
He kicked torps, didn't he?
He could kick a big
torp. Good play, Gary Malarkey.
Very nice.
David's from Greensboro, then we'll move on. Go, Dave.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. I remember when Tim was commentating on Channel 7 in 92, and it was Geelong against Fitzroy, and Abbott got a free kick in the centre and kicked a torpedo post-high from about 70 or 80 metres out. Do you remember that, Tim? Because you absolutely laughed your head off.
He could kick the ball. He could kick like a mule, Gary Ablett. He kicked the biggest torp I think I've ever seen at Waverley in the 1989 prelim final. I think we played against them in the 90s.
Was that when he kicked six?
He was unbelievable. He was almost on the wing when he kicked
it. I reckon his game that day, it was better than his grand final performance.
That was the best game I've ever seen him play that day.
Yeah, I agree.
Were you commentating?
No, I was actually admiring him.
Oh, okay.
I was on the field at the same time, admiring him.
We'll get the 92 commentary of you when he did kick that talk.
Okay. We're doing that now?
No.
No, we go. Okay. Let's fast forward.
This is your hour.
Yeah, what do you got for us?
Let's fast forward. At the start of the year, I thought when people are talking about who's the best player in the comp, we all have our guesses about that. I did say Dustin Martin,
mm-hmm.
And I'm prepared to say now, if Dustin Martin is within 10 of the leader of the Brownlow come the bye, he will win.
Well, he won't win. He might get the most votes. He's ineligible.
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of
most votes.
I mean, his form.
It has last month particularly.
Outstanding, brilliant. He's in a very good team, and he's clearly the best player in that very good team.
I can back up what you're saying with the stats I've got here that Gary's provided for me off his program on Fox. And number two in disposals in the last month, 1 metres game, 1 inside 50s, 4 scoring assists, number 2 scoring involvements. The number one player ranked in the competition in the last month.
Did you say that Monday night?
No, that's what some of the stuff we talked about. But I'd never be disrespectful to Dustin because I rate him right up there as well. But he has that time since the 2017 season. It has looked like it's been not hard, but to try and get back to that level, there was an indifference sometimes about the way he played.
I think he's reached the level many times, but he hasn't sustained it.
And it's, what I noticed about it on the weekend was just how invested he was and how he wanted to be involved in everything.
And the one thing that separates him, I hope you both know how keen I am on Bontempelli as a player and clearly Dangerfield and Cripps and those
guys.
I'm not sure. I know you're a massive Yeo fan. I don't think he's quite at that level yet. But the difference, what separates Dustin Martin is his finishing. Bontempelli and Dangerfield miss far too many goals for elite players. Martin doesn't.
Yeah.
Martin's got him covered in the most important area of the ground.
His field kicking might be the best of all those guys as well. He doesn't give the ball a lot of elevation. It cuts through the air and it gets there quickly.
But Bontempelli's a beautiful field kick. But he's very risky in front of goal.
Yeah, he doesn't convert. And what about the stat about Patrick Dangerfield that came to light with David King on Monday? Did you hear about that one?
Yeah, I'm not sure it stacks up under scrutiny, that stat.
Why not?
Well, he's kicked how many? 3 goals out of 29 shots or something? Yeah. Is that?
What's the stat that he's kicked?
He kicked two or three goals out of having 29 shots on the run. Between 30 and 40 metres.
Yeah, well, that's
out.
A bit too.
The
overall figures are the ones.
That's a big enough sample size to say there's an issue.
When a bloke has a shot for goal, he believes he can kick it, right? Are we agreed on that?
No.
You reckon a bloke just blazed away and said, I'll take a one chance in 100, I'll get this?
Sometimes.
Well, I go the other way and think that they think when ball in hand, they can kick it.
Right.
But Dangerfield this year has kicked 21-15. And the previous year, he kicked 24-23.
Right.
So he's marginally better than 50%.
30 to 40. He's kicked two goals, 28.
What about from 15 to 18?
I'm just telling you, that's a big sample.
I reckon we've got to take them in toto, don't you, Tim?
Yes, and when you're playing as a midfielder, you've got five or six blokes hanging off you. It's difficult when you're carrying four or five blokes out of the centre and you get to the 30 or 40, you're tired and you're a little bit...
30 to 40 metres out, excluding set shots, from 23.
What else are you going to exclude? Martin last year kicked 31-21. Dangerfield kicked 24-23.
What did Martin kick?
31-21.
Yeah.
And this year, Dusty is 18-13.
What's the bond?
The bond is 14-24 this year.
Well, you mark him down on that?
Of course I do.
Don't yell at me.
That's how this discussion started.
Have we got the audio of this Gary
Abbott
kick against Fitzroy in 1992?
The torp against Fitzroy in 92. The Wisp reckons he called it as well as he could possibly call it. Let's have a listen.
He makes sure of it. He'll have a shot from here. He might too if he goes to the torpedo. Yes! Have a look at this! Gary Ablett has bombed it.
Well, I tipped it, Macca.
No!
I tipped it.
What an icy pole. I'm bringing back icy pole of the week.
Hang on. Was there anything inaccurate about what I just said there? I tipped it before he went back. I said he can kick it from here.
We all heard you. Just let it sit out there.
You don't need to go back over it. It's the theatre.
Michael Williamson did that. Remember he said, I tipped this, Butch? Back in 1966.
That's who I was parroting.
I tipped this.
And you need to listen to the whiz.
Oh, he listens to himself.
Hey, what do you think's wrong in Adelaide? I know we probably don't focus on Adelaide as much clearly as we would if it was a Victorian team. Yep.
We're talking about the footy team?
Yeah.
I want you to ruminate and marinate on that.